Hello and welcome to the Friday, March 21st, 2014 edition of the Sands and its Storm Centers Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm the recording from Baltimore, Maryland. In diaries today, I got a little script that I found helpful for me and would like to share for others to use and, well, also to test and improve upon. And it's about normalizing IPv6 addresses. The problem with IPv6 addresses is that they may be abbreviated. For example, some of the leading zeros may be removed or groups of all zeros replaced with colon colon. What this means is if you're trying to correlate log files, you first have to normalize the IP addresses so to make it easier to find a particular IP address in different log files, as different software uses different schemes to abbreviate. For example, IP tables doesn't abbreviate all, but Apache, Nginx and such do abbreviate. So with this little Perl script that I posted today, it should make it easy for you to normalize your logs and make it easier then to find common IP addresses. As I said, it's currently sort of in the works for me state, so I really appreciate some feedback from others. And then we got an important update from Cisco for their email security appliance and their content security management appliance. So that's the ESA and SMA products. Interesting vulnerability here. It affects the safe list block list. Essentially, the way this would be exploited, an authenticated user would upload a tampered or a crafted safe list block list to the system via FTP. And then when this block list is evaluated, arbitrary code execution can happen. The only thing that comes to mind here, you know, how that could happen and how I've seen that happen in similar circumstances, is that essentially the IP addresses that you list in that safe list are passed as arguments to a script that then will update firewall rules. But then, of course, if I, for example, add semicolons or ampersands or such, I do have a shell command escape. I don't have one of these appliances to test this theory, but that's sort of what the particular vulnerability sounds like. Now, first of all, the attacker has to be authenticated, so the attacker would already be able to do some damage just via the command line interface, for example, and has to be able to upload a new block list via FTP. So the FTP service has to be enabled for this vulnerability to be triggered. So there is a patch for it now, applied if you can, and this sounds like something you really do want to take care of pretty quickly. And talking about vulnerabilities in security software, Errata Security today had an interesting little reminder that it's the 10-year anniversary of the VidiWorm. Not a lot of people remember the VidiWorm, but it's sort of one of my favorite worms because it was the closest we ever had, kind of, I think, to a zero-day worm, in the sense that the worm was released within a day or so after the patch came out. The vulnerable software back then was ISS's Black Ice personal firewall. And then the other sort of new thing that this worm did, it was actually destructive in that it overrode sectors on the victim's hard drive. It also spread extremely fast. The blog post at Errata Security has some real neat sort of first-hand descriptions of the events from 10 years ago. And as a reminder of all the bad things that can happen after a relatively low-tech and simple phishing attack, Ars Technica today has an interesting article about a recent attack like that by the CERN Electronic Army against Microsoft, and now we find that some internal Microsoft documents have been published. These documents detail invoices that Microsoft sent to, for example, the FBI to pay for the costs involved in responses to requests for customer information. Ars Technica also rightfully kind of points out that it's sad that we are still using insecure, unencrypted, and apparently not even digitally signed email for documents like that. And then, of course, exchanging large attachments and links and all kinds of other documents without relying on any kind of digital signature makes us more vulnerable to phishing attacks that then lead to the leakage of these documents. And talking about insecure communication, Google announced that it is now finally encrypting all internal traffic as well. For a while now, Google did make HTTPS the default if you connect to Google's public servers, but a lot of its internal traffic was still unencrypted, which is really typical for a lot of enterprises. But with the recent spying revelations, Google went ahead and is now also encrypting internal traffic. Where this usually turns out to be the largest exposure is, for example, between data centers. If you rely on some kind of private circuit that you rent from a third party like a telco company, but you don't really control how this private circuit is exactly implemented, hardly ever will you actually get a dedicated pair of copper or a dedicated fiber, but instead your traffic will be mixed in with other customers' traffic and just separated by MLPS labels or some other technology like that. Well, and that's it for today. So thanks again for listening and talk to you again on Monday. Bye.